Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, this October our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $3,000 off their CT machine. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is speaker, author, and coach David Cooks, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on at the end of week one of the NBA season. It has been a topsy-turvy, sort of weird opening to this season. We kind of felt like this season would be more normal because last year we had these weird results at the beginning. We kind of thought it was COVID. Yeah, we kind of thought it was COVID, or maybe it was the shortened off season and everything else. And this year you're coming in with a normal off season, regular amount of training camp, and yet we still have sort of not completely upside down, because there's some teams that are doing what we expected on the positive side, but there's certainly some teams that the consensus was they were going to be good that have gotten off to rough starts. And then we have some of our tanktastic teams that are right near at the top of the standings, and we're going to talk a little bit about all those. We've kind of have 4, 5, 6 teams in each conference that we want to talk about. So what we're going to do is just kind of run down the standings. And for the teams that we don't really want to talk that much about, we'll maybe share a sentence or two, 30 seconds worth.
And if Mike goes too much, I'm going to buzz him.
Jason's going to buzz me. He has threatened. He's threatened to buzz me if I get over talking. So we will see how that goes. Hopefully, I won't get buzzed. I'm going to do my best to keep
And I don't really have a sound effect because I have my app on my phone to use for the. So it's just going to be going. Time's up, Mike.
That'll work. I like it. We'll be good to go.
The listeners won't turn us off immediately.
Hopefully not when Jason starts buzzing me. Hopefully, I'm going to keep the buzzing to a minimum. So, all right. Take us through, Jay.
So the first team's Milwaukee Bucks. They've only played 2 games. I don't really know what the scheduling is on this situation, but they've played 2 games, and some teams have played 4. I don't have anything to say. They're the same. They're just getting through, and they're going to be near the top the whole season. So
as soon as they get Middleton back, they're going to be fine. They have the number one defense in the league, and I think the number two offense, and it's just a matter of time for Milwaukee. They'll cruise through the regular season, and we'll see what happens from there. Yep. But I expect Milwaukee to be right where they are at the end of the season.
All right. The Washington Wizards are number 2. I thought they looked all right against the Cavs, but I think they're going to be solid. I think they will compete. They're not a top tier talented team. They didn't beat the Cavs without Garland, so I mean, I think they're good, but they're not great.
Bradley Beal looked good the other night against the Cavs. I thought that was the most energetic and springy he looked in a long time, at least in games that I've seen the Wizards play. They have a bunch of competent players on their roster, guys that have NBA track records of being solid starters. So that to me says that this team can continue to compete, which is why both you and I picked them for the over. I think they're going to compete for that back end of the Eastern Conference play-in tournament. So they'll be somewhere in the 9, 10, 11, 12 range when all is said and done. But a nice start for the Wizards.
All right. Next up, the Boston Celtics. they've looked pretty good. I'm really interested to see what happens on Friday, seeing the Cavs play. It sounds like Garland's on track to play in that game. I don't know if he'll be restricted on minutes or what they're going to do with him, but it sounds like there's a good chance he's going to play. I'm really excited for that game, Mike, just to see what we can do against them.
Yeah, I mean, Boston, look, I think people prior to the whole Ime Udoka situation, I think a lot of people out there picked Boston to get back to the NBA Finals, and a lot of people were picking them as the title favorite. I'm not so sure that I agree with that, but I do think I picked this team for the over. I do think that because of what they can do defensively, because of what Brogdon brings to the table, and Tatum continues to get better, I still feel like he's averaging 32-8, so hard to really quibble with his production to this point. I still will need to see him get it done in the biggest moments after he came up a little bit short in the finals against Golden State. Boston's going to be good all year if Mazzulla ends up being able to do a good job on the bench for this team, and it appears that they're not reeling in any way from what happened with Udoka, then I would expect Boston to continue to be right there at the top of the Eastern Conference with Milwaukee. To me, these are probably the two no-brainer best teams in the East when you start looking up and down the standings. I think all the other teams have question marks.
Yeah. All right. Next up, the Charlotte Hornets, 2-1 to start the season. A team that I ordained the worst in the NBA before the season started, and it's not off to a good start on this one. I don't have any faith that they're going to keep this up.
Unfortunately, you had the over.
Did I really?
You did. You had the over.
What was the over?
36.5, baby. You got Charlotte with 37 wins. Good thing they already got two coming out of the gate.
How did I? There's no way I picked the over. I need to go back to the tape on that one.
All right, look, man, I got them all written down right here in front of me.
All right, I'm going to have to fact check you because
I don't know.
Or I need to know what kind of drugs I was taking before we recorded that podcast.
You must be you're a big LaMelo fan, apparently. Or maybe you just like Steve Clifford's coaching. I think that's
I can't imagine that I took the over in that, Mike. I think that has to be a typo.
All right, well, you got to go back and listen. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I have it written down right here.
There's no way.
Maybe you were thinking about Book Knight's mugshot.
There's no way. I said there's no way. I can't imagine I said the over. Listen.
Okay, we're going to check it. We're going to play it on next week's episode.
I had to be really, really sick in order to do that pick, and I wasn't sick yet at that point. But I talked about this with students in class, that I think Charlotte's one of the worst teams in the league, and I know they're 2-1, but
this team's bad. There's no way they're winning games. They're going to be at the very bottom of the Eastern Conference. They're going to be battling out for the last slot, I think, when all is said and done. Although I will say that Steve Clifford, maybe not the best coach for young player development, although I'm not sure that other than LaMelo, there's really a whole lot of young talent on this team that needs developing. So maybe Clifford wills them to a few more wins than you and I think they're capable of getting. But yeah, I don't see this team competing for a play-in spot in the East. I see them clearly being down at the bottom.
All right, next up, the Atlanta Hawks, 2-1. They've looked all right. They've looked good from what I've seen. I've not really watched much. I've seen some highlights and whatnot. But, you know, they're 2-1. I think they're about where people expected them to be. I can't remember. Did I take the under on this one?
We both took the under of 46.5.
I don't have any. I mean, it's 2-1. It's early in the season. I don't have any alarm on that. I think 2-1 doesn't really say that they're going to go over or under the amount. So I'm unswayed in my opinion at this point.
Yeah, I would say I agree with you. I think ultimately that what this team is trying to figure out at this point in the season is, what does it look like with Trae Young and DeJounte Murray in the backcourt? It seems like to this point that they've been able to mesh fairly well, and that each guy is kind of getting their times to be able to handle the ball and to sort of get things going. Right before the season, they signed DeAndre Hunter to that $94 million, 4 years, $94 million, which seems pretty exorbitant for a guy who really hasn't done a whole lot and hasn't really been healthy very often. But yet, at the same point, I think that you look at the type of player that he is. He certainly fits the prototype. Theoretical DeAndre Hunter could be exactly what the Hawks need. Now, whether or not they ever get the realized version of that, who knows? So to this point, I mean, Trae Young averaging 25 a game, DeJounte Murray averaging 19, feels like they're figuring it out. And if you're an Atlanta fan, I think you got to be satisfied with where the Hawks sit right now. I think I'm still comfortable with my undertake. I think there's just a lot of good teams. I think what we're going to end up with in both conferences is a ton of teams that win between like 44 and 50 games. That's really what it looks like to me at this point.
All right, Mike, I did some research.
All right.
I unfortunately did take the Charlotte Hornets over, and I have no idea what the heck I was talking about.
All right.
We had a brief intermission that in the magic of editing you're not going to hear, and in that time I pulled it up, and I just can't believe that I took the over in Charlotte. So I'm going to hope on a miracle that they're the over, but I just don't see that happening. Anyways.
LaMelo Ball, third team All-NBA.
Okay.
That's what you're hanging your hat on.
Next up, the New York Knicks, 2-1. Once again, I don't really have much to say about them because I haven't seen any of them playing. So,
Brunson. I mean, I think Brunson, I watched a little bit of their opening game with the Grizzlies, and I think what makes the difference is Brunson is just a competent point guard who's going to get them organized and sort of makes all their other guys fall into place, if that makes sense. I still think Tibbs probably, if you're a Knicks fan, you'd like to see probably Obi Toppin play more. You'd like to see Emmanuel Quickley play more. But Tibbs is going to coach these guys hard, and I think Brunson is a good addition. Is Brunson a superstar that's going to take the Knicks into the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference? Absolutely not. Is he a guy that can get them organized and have them in the battle to be part of the play-in tournament this year? Absolutely.
Listen, I think I figured out why Charlotte's doing so well, Mike. LaMelo hasn't played yet.
I know he hasn't played yet.
I think
2-1, which makes 2-1 for them even more remarkable.
Ewing theory, as Simmons likes to talk about.
Yeah, who knows? We both had the Knicks under 39.5.
I'm not unswayed still. Unswayed.
Yeah, I'm not unswayed either.
Okay. Next up, the Cleveland Cavaliers, 2-1. Listen, me without Garland are 2-1. We probably should be 3-0. I'm willing to say we got screwed in the first game. There were some atrocious calls down the stretch. And I don't see the last 2-minute report. I probably should look at it. But there were some atrocious calls, egregious calls made in that game down the stretch. Now, I don't know if those calls didn't go our way or went our way. It guarantees a victory or not. But it definitely didn't help us in that game. So,
you're 2-1 without your best player from last season.
100%. And I mean, Mitchell's been that super dynamic on both ends of the floor. His defense looks night and day compared to what he was putting up the last 2 years in Utah. Like my dad sent me a text and said, I thought Mitchell was terrible on defense based on everything I've read. And I said, well, his defense in college was solid. And then his first 2 years in the NBA, he wasn't really rated terribly as a defender. It was literally the last 2 years he wasn't great. So if he continues to work like he's working, you get Mobley, Jared Allen protecting the rim. You get Okoro to come in, and he's not great offensively. Listen, we're also living with right now, Chetty's playing great off the bench. Love is playing great off the bench. Robin Lopez is throwing shots up behind his head and it's going in. And they look super competent. And like, once again, this is without our theoretical backup point guard in a few months. Once again, we can go back to the fact that like Rubio and Mitchell played together already. So they know how to play with one another. Rubio and Love played together. They know how to play together. So like, there's a group like this team's going to be good, and I feel good about my over. I feel good about their over, and I just hope that we aren't too good that we end up in the 4-5 seed. That's all I'm going to say.
This team's going to be good. I think there's no question about that. Donovan Mitchell is tremendous as a scorer, and as you said, the defense that we've seen here through these first three games has been good. And if you put good defense from Donovan Mitchell, with good effort from Darius Garland, with Mobley and Allen. Those two guys block so many shots. I mean, shots that they honestly have no business blocking, where they just come out of nowhere and they're swatting shots away. The defense is going to be good all year. I know that, what'd you say, they were second in the league overall at this point.
Yeah, second league in the NBA behind Milwaukee.
I would say that there's a pretty good chance, if this team stays healthy, that they're going to be a top five defense. I feel pretty confident in saying that. And offensively, once you have Mitchell and Garland in your backcourt, and now you have two guys that can break down a defense, that can get their own shot, that can create for others. And I think Mitchell is clearly has more of a scoring mentality, whereas I think Darius probably has more of a distribution mentality. I think they're going to complement each other really well as we see them more and more together out on the floor as the season goes on. As I've said many, many times, the ceiling on this team, to me, depends on Mobley's development as an offensive player. Through three games, we haven't seen a whole lot. I haven't seen really much of anything that jumps out at me that says he's dramatically improved in any area. His handle still looks shaky anytime he puts it on the floor. And there's traffic. I'm always worried that it's going to get poked away. His shot looks fine, but he still has trouble getting to his shot because of the shaky ball handling, and he's still really not strong enough to overpower guys in the post. Now, he's still super long, and when he gets going, if he can get ahead of steam and get by somebody and doesn't have to dribble in traffic, then he looks pretty good on wide open shots. His jumper looks good. He's got good form, and I think he makes it when he's open. It's just a matter of, can he get to those shots? He's not strong enough to really do much in the post, and his handle isn't good enough yet to start attacking from the perimeter. So I've been, I don't know if disappointed is the right word, but I was hoping to see a little bit more from him on the offensive end of the floor. And again, it's early, it's three games in, but I'd like to see a little bit more. But defensively, what him and Allen do on the interior for this team, I'm not sure there's any team in the league that has two guys of the level that these two guys can get to as shot blockers and guys who are just able to protect the paint. And then you look at the rest of their team, and as you said, they just have – it's a competent roster full of guys that can come in and do things. Kevin Love can rebound the ball, can shoot threes. I'm not in love with Caris LeVert, but he does do some things that –
he's been far better this unit, he's been far better this year than anything that I saw last year, Mike.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. I still don't necessarily love what he does. There's something about the way he plays that feels kind of like he's always teetering on the edge of disaster. But I do think that he gives you a third guy that can put it on the floor, that can create things for other people. He's averaging 6 assists a game at this point, so that's hard to argue with. If you can get through this whole season and LeVert's going to average 6 assists, that's going to be pretty good for this team. And I just think you talk about Dean Wade, you talk about Neto, you talk about Okoro. These are guys that can play roles. Now, are they great? No. But can they play roles and come in and not hurt you, especially when you can surround them with some of the top-end talent that this team has? I've been impressed so far through three games, and especially, like I said, you've played these three games without your best player from last season. I would expect that Darius is going to be even better than he was last year once he gets going and gets back into the flow of things. So I feel really good about the over on this team. I think they're going to be really, really, really good. I expect them to not be in the play-in. I mean, I just think they're not going to end up 7 or below. They're going to end up in the top 6.
All right. Before we continue, Mike, currently in the Phoenix Golden State game, there was a bit of a brouhaha. And Klay Thompson just got ejected from the game, got double 2 technicals, and Devin Booker got a technical foul. Instant reaction to a little brouhaha testiness going on in this Western Conference matchup.
Well, Phoenix, I think, is right now they're up 13 on the Warriors. And I don't know what to make of Phoenix. I know we're not in the Western Conference yet, but I mean, I think we all thought that they were going to probably drop precipitously from their 64 wins, but they're still going to be a good team. And who knows? You can see where Golden State could rub people the wrong way. So I don't have a problem with anybody wanting to go after the Warriors.
Okay. All right. So just thought it was. I just want instant reaction, instant feedback. So there you go. All right. The next two teams that we're going to talk about, we're lumping them together. Toronto and Chicago. They're both 2-2. To me, they're meh so far. I know Toronto beat us. There was a lot of extenuating circumstances in that game. Darius getting hurt. Our whole lineup got thrown out of the whack. The poor refereeing. I think we're better than Toronto. We're better than Chicago, clearly. So I'm going to say meh on both the teams.
I like Toronto. I think that when you look at what they have, Van Vliet always surprises me. I never look at him and be like, oh, this guy, he's a great player. But he is a great player. He did it at the highest level in the finals with the Raptors against the Warriors. He's just a guy who knows how to win. And then you look at the rest of the roster. You just got a bunch of long guys that can do different things, that can play defense. I'm still not sure that I want to depend on Siakam and Fred VanVleet down the stretch of games to win me playoff games. VanVleet is tough as heck, but he's little, he's small, and those guys can get taken away in the playoffs. And then Siakam, he's good, but I would not want him to be my go-to guy where I got to get a bucket and I'm going to give it to Siakam. So I like the Raptors. I do think the Cavs are probably better and probably will finish with a higher record, with a higher seed. But Toronto's going to be good. Chicago's a playing team, I think, at best. Even if they get healthy, I see them down in the, at best, getting to maybe they can get to the 8 seed, maybe, depending on what happens with Brooklyn and Miami, who we're going to talk about. But I'm not a big fan of Chicago.
All right. Next up, our first fun team to talk about, the Brooklyn Nets. Oh, man, this team has looked atrocious so far. And my favorite part, did you see Ben Simmons fall out of the game?
Did you see that? Yeah, with Ja. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was good stuff.
That was good stuff. Oh, man. I don't like what I'm seeing out of Brooklyn. We'll kind of lump them together with Philly because they're next to each other in the standings. I don't like what I see out of either of these teams. The body language is atrocious. I think Brooklyn, to be honest with you, probably has more room for improvement, and it's purely because they haven't had Seth Curry at all. Joe Harris isn't playing yet, right? He's not playing yet, right?
No, he played. He played. Oh, he is, no, he played. Is. Yeah, okay, he's playing.
Curry's not playing, so maybe there's a little bit of room for growth. But, man, both these teams are not looking good to start the season. And I'm liking both of our – I'm pretty sure we both took the under on this, right? Do we
yes.
take – okay,
no, good. You took the over, man. You took the over. Sorry.
On Brooklyn?
Yes.
Okay, but on Philly, I definitely took the under. We both took the under on that. There's no way.
We both took the under, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we both took the under there.
Okay, so are you laughing at me not remembering what I wrote? Listen, I didn't write it down.
Well, trust me. If I didn't have it in front of me, I'm not sure I would remember. I'm more laughing at the Brooklyn Nets, and actually I'm laughing at Ben Simmons' stat line. So I will continue to eat crow at any point when you want to feed it to me when it comes to Ben Simmons. Simmons is better than Embiid six years ago.
Good. I was going to say.
Ben Simmons right now is averaging 5 points a game. He's dishing out 7 assists. He is shooting 53% from the field. He's banging home a lofty 42% of his free throws. He's averaging almost four turnovers a game.
How many minutes per game is he playing?
28 minutes a game.
He's playing 28 minutes a game. He's shooting 50% from the field, and he's averaging 5 points. That tells you everything you need to know.
Wait, hold on. He's averaging 5.7 points per game. How many fouls do you think he's averaging?
Well, he fouled out. He's probably had 5 fouls in the other game. He's played 3 games, right? 3?
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's averaging 5 fouls a game.
4.7. He's not quite there. When he starts averaging more fouls than points per game, then you know you really got something in Ben Simmons. Good luck with that, Brooklyn. Look, Simmons is not – it's over. It's over for him. I'm telling you right now that his days as a top-flight NBA player, he's not coming back from it mentally. You can say he's rusty. You can say he's injured. He's just not the guy that averaged 17, 9, and 8 or whatever in his second year. That guy is gone. I'm sorry. He's gone. And Brooklyn, that ship has sailed. So that means you're hitching your wagon to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Good luck with that.
And Durant's looked good, by the way. Durant has looked good.
He has. But there's just nothing there. They have no defense whatsoever. They're atrocious on the boards. They have no bigs. It's just not going to work. And this team's going to be way under. And at some point, these personalities are all going to implode. And I could see this team, in all honesty, I could see one or both of Kyrie, Durant shutting it down. Simmons gets traded for pennies on the dollar. And this team finishes out of the play-in. They're horrific.
There's only two teams in the league that have given up more points. Do you know the two teams, Mike? Without looking.
Let me think. Sacramento?
Nope. The Memphis Grizzlies.
Adam. Okay.
And the Denver Nuggets. The Denver Nuggets have the worst defense in the league. They're giving up 125 points per game.
Not surprising. So, Nets, I have the under. You, unfortunately, have the over. I'm feeling pretty good about my under pick at this point.
Sixers, go ahead. You'd say your piece on the Sixers.
Look, any team that has James Harden, and especially now you have diminished James Harden, but we're still giving him the ball to do whatever he wants and dribble around and just play Harden basketball. Embiid has looked, I would say, out of shape and mopey, which isn't all that surprising. This team is what it is. They may right the ship. They may win some regular season games because they have talent, but if you're counting on this team to do anything in the postseason, you are sadly mistaken. Both of us had the under on 49.5. I feel pretty confident that they're going to stay underneath that number.
Lock it in, baby. Lock it in.
Yeah, I just don't see. Again, this is a case where the personalities, the history of these guys, the potential for injury, the overrating of the bench players and the additions that they made to the roster, I just don't see it for Philadelphia. Now, they're probably, just by virtue of the talent of Embiid, if he stays relatively healthy and engaged, this team probably is going to avoid the play-in. But I think people that had them in that first tier with Boston and Milwaukee, I just don't see that.
Okay. All right. So we're gonna go with the teams. There's four teams left in the Eastern Conference. We're going to talk about the three teams that we expected to be at the bottom, and then we'll talk about the other team. Does that make the most sense, Mike, really quickly?
Yeah, really, so, really quickly. We can buzz through. So,
Indiana, Detroit, Orlando, all teams that we expected to be in the bottom. Now, I know that I took the over on Detroit. I'm pretty sure, right? I took the over on Detroit.
Let's find the Detroit Pistons. Let me find the Pistons.
I feel like they were going to be pesky.
We both have over 28.5 for the Pistons.
I'm not willing to say that that's not still possible because they've not looked terrible. Their defense needs some work, but they haven't looked bad. But Indiana,
they have the worst point differential in the league.
Yeah, their defense is bad, but
yeah.
I'm still telling you, Indiana's bad, Orlando's bad. Not surprised. They're gonna both those teams. Listen. Orlando, I know what you're going to talk about really briefly. Listen, if you're hitching your wagon to Bol Bol to make a big difference and would bring you wins, a guy who hasn't had any minutes in any other team, that's probably not a good sign, Mike. Just saying. I know you're a Bol Bol believer.
I'm not hitching my wagon to Bol Bol, but Bol Bol is and should be, if he's healthy, a contributing member of society. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
All right, so here's my comment. I'll go through each team one at a time. So if you're the Pistons, I think you probably feel pretty good. Cade is off to a start. I mean, it's not great. It hasn't been great. He's averaging 18 a game. He's shooting below 40% from the field, so he's shooting 39% from the field. Hasn't really got to the line that much. He's only getting the line three times a game. I think he like Mobley, I think if you're a fan of the Pistons, you probably want to see more out of Cade than what you've seen to this point. There's good signs, though, with Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren. They're two rookies from this year. I think both of those guys are going to be good contributing members of society and or of society. they're going to be good contributing members of the Detroit Pistons for a long time to come. And Cade's going to be fine. But if you were a Pistons fan, I think you'd want to see them take a little bit of a leap forward. So I think the young players for Detroit, you have to be optimistic there. Then you go with Orlando. Suggs had one big game, then hasn't really done much in the other games. Paolo clearly is the real deal. Franz Wagner, I think, is the real deal. Say what you want about Bol Bol, but if you can get a 7-2 or 7-3 guy that can block shots and shoot threes and do some of the things that he can do, if you can keep him healthy, I think he's a functional player that can help them down in the future. But ultimately, it comes down to how good are Paolo and Franz. And this team, I still think I picked them for the over. You picked them for the under at 25.5. I really don't see anything that would dissuade me from thinking that as they kind of come together and Paolo gets more experience that they can't win 26 games. I see that as being a real possibility, although I could certainly understand that you would probably feel good about your under. But I think they have some good young players there in Orlando. And then finally, you look at Indiana, and Haliburton is having a great start to his season. I think he's averaging double digits in assists. I don't have his stat line in front of me. I'm going to pull it up here in a second. But Haliburton's had a great start to the year, and Mathurin, the rookie shooting guard from Arizona, has been tremendous. He's averaging like 24 a game, I think, somewhere in there. And they've just been – those two guys give you reason for optimism. And I think at some point, probably Indiana's going to trade Buddy Hield and trade Miles Turner, whether that's to the Lakers or somebody else. But I think if you're the Pacers, you're hanging your hat on the fact that you have two guys, you have your backcourt of the future here. And now it's just a matter of building around Mathurin and around Haliburton. Both those guys have been good. Halliburton's averaging 24 points, 4 rebounds, and 9.8 assists to this point through 4 games. And Mathurin is playing 27 minutes a game, averaging 22 points per game. And Mathurin's also shooting 48% from the field and 42% from 3. So if those things continue, that's star-level production from a guy who's a rookie. And Haliburton, I think the question with him was, could he step it up and score and not just be the connective tissue on a good team, but the fact that he's putting up 24 a game and almost 10 assists, he's good. And then the Miami Heat, I think the Miami Heat 1-3. I had Miami for the over. You had them for the under. I have reason to believe that you are going to be correct and I'm going to be incorrect. Kyle Lowry looks like a shell of himself. You're relying on Max Strus and Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson. Bam's been bad to this point in these 4 games. Jimmy Butler, a lot of miles on him, a guy that frequently gets nicked up during the season. I'm as big of a fan of Eric Spoelstra and Heat culture and just what they do year in and year out, but I think Miami falls out. I see them right now. I won't be surprised if they are not a top 6 team in the East.
Ooh, I like that. More room for us. Okay. And you didn't say anything about Orlando. Did you want to talk about Orlando really quickly?
No, I did.
Did you?
I talked about Paolo and Franz and Bol Bol.
Oh, yeah.
You must have fallen asleep. You must have fallen asleep during that part of the podcast.
I was trying to horn you. I apologize.
Just horn me, man. Just give me the sound effect. You don't have to text me, man. Just give me the, I'm good, man. Just give it to me.
All right.
Don't be shy.
All right, we're going to move to the Western Conference, but just to kind of clear up the Klay Thompson, Devin Booker thing, Mike, I'm going to tell you this. So Devin Booker apparently said we were coming for those rings, or coming for the ring this year, and Klay Thompson said, well, they kind of got in each other's faces, and then they got double teed up, and then Klay Thompson just started yelling, I got 4 of those MFers. I got 4 of them. And Devin Booker took exception to that, so got in Klay's face, and then Klay kept to continue barking. And then Klay, for whatever reason, got the heave-ho and not Devin Booker. So as he was getting booed out of the Phoenix Arena, Klay held up 4 fingers and started counting his fingers to the fans. I think that's nice, listen, whether you like Golden State or not, I think it's pretty funny.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good move. That's a good move from Klay.
Especially,
I would I would side, based on your description of what happened, I would side with Klay Thompson on that. Devin Booker, you could have gone in after your ring last year in Game 7 against the Mavericks, so it might be time to be quiet.
So, and like I said, I'm just based on what I'm seeing on social media and whatnot, so that might not be the full picture, but it's what I'm seeing.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Western Conference, Portland, big surprise, 4-0. We thought this was a tanking team. Or at least I did.
Potentially.
Dame has looked really good. And they continue to win because they haven't lost yet. So four wins. I think this is slightly skew. I mean, their defense is pretty good. I don't know. I guess I could look really quickly and see who Portland has played. Because maybe that, like, has part of the, trying to pull it up here.
They played Sacramento, Phoenix, the Lakers, and Denver. So not an easy schedule.
No. Okay. So, well, I mean, they did play the Lakers. first dig. Portland's pretty good so far. Like, I'm impressed by what I'm seeing. Now, do I think this is going to come to, like, to stay? I mean, I'm almost certain did I take the under on this one? I had to have.
You took the under. I took the over.
Okay. Well, you're looking.
I feel good about the over. I think the bet on the over is a bet on Damian Lillard, and it didn't look good after game one when he came out and scored 20, and I think he was like 3-for-14 or something from three. And since then, he's put up 41, 41, and 31. So it appears that the idea that Dame was going to be on his way out of the league was maybe a little bit premature. This team has a good starting lineup. When you think about Jeremy Grant and Josh Hart and Lillard and Simons and Nurkic, like that five, when healthy, that's a legitimate good playoff starting five. And then you look at guys that coming off their bench. I know Gary Payton hasn't played yet, been injured, but should be coming back soon. Nasir Little just signed a pretty big contract. They got Shadon Sharpe, the rookie, who people seem to think is going to be pretty good. So I think that's your eight. Justice Winslow is kind of in there a little bit if he can stay healthy, which has been almost impossible for him throughout his career. But that starting five for Portland is good. And if you're getting near peak Dame, look, we've seen it for the entirety of his career that he's good enough to generate a top 10 NBA offense pretty much by himself. And if you can do that, that's going to put you solidly in the middle of the pack. Now, Portland's not as good as some of these teams above them, and I don't expect them to finish at the top of the Western Conference. But if Dame is Dame, then they're going to be solidly, I think, in that play-in range and then maybe have a chance to compete for spots five or six, depending on how things break ahead of them.
Yep. Okay. Next, the team that you picked for the over, the New Orleans Pelicans.
They have looked better. I mean, they've looked good, and they won tonight without Ingram, without Zion, which is Zion out?
Without Herb Jones.
So Zion was out? Is he like? Did they say he's day to day, or what did they say for him? Like, I mean, that fall was scary. So
it
like,
was that fall was definitely scary.
I'm still liking my under a 250 career games, Mike.
No,
I'm just
telling man, you. No way. Zion, look, if you have their full roster, and I know that's a big if, but if you have that whole roster, so Williamson has had a right posterior hip lower back contusion, Herb Jones right knee hyperextension, and then Ingram, who was in the concussion protocol. So those are probably those might be their three best players, depending on how you want to compare what CJ brings to the table versus what Herb Jones brings to the table defensively. But clearly Zion and Brandon Ingram are two best guys. They won tonight without all three of them. When they've played, they've just been offensively pretty devastating with those guys on the floor. And I don't see any reason why that would not continue as long as those guys remain healthy. This is the caveat for every NBA team. It's probably even bigger for this team based on Zion's injury history. But this team is going to score, and they're going to score a lot. And good luck trying to match up and guard Ingram and Zion Williamson. Good luck finding two guys on your roster that can handle those two guys. It's just not going to happen. For me, as long as this team stays healthy, they are way, way over 44 and a half. This team's going to win 50 games if these guys are healthy.
Okay. I mean, I can see it based on what I'm seeing so far. We'll see if they continue. All right. The next two teams we're going to lump together, Mike, the Spurs and the Jazz. The Tankathon is going into the who's going to sabotage themselves-a-thon more, because both these teams we projected were not going to be good. And then they've gone out and they've won three of their first four games. I'm going to be clear. I don't see either of these teams remaining this productive. I just don't see it. Danny Ainge might explode if Utah continues to win. Okay? I don't see this continuing. I don't know if you agree or disagree, but I don't see either of these teams remaining this competitive.
No, I don't either. I mean, I think Utah has more of the veteran players, whereas San Antonio has more of the young guys. Devin Vassell's been really good for the Spurs. Obviously, Markkanen has been really good for the Jazz.
He almost put up a triple-double the other night.
When Markkanen was here, I think the big thing with him here in Cleveland that I felt was just he was inconsistent, and it felt like when you needed him to make a big shot, he didn't necessarily make it. But he's a good player, and Utah has, I would say, a bunch of good players. You think about Conley, you think about Clarkson, Colin Sexton's good. Walker Kessler's good. They have good players. They just don't have a guy to kind of make it all work, and they don't want to make it work is the honest truth. Now, the players on the roster might want to make it work, but clearly Danny Ainge in the front office don't. So, yeah, I expect Utah eventually to slide. They're not as good as these other teams in the West, even as constituted playing with the veterans that they have. They've caught lightning in a bottle in the first three games. San Antonio, I think you got to be happy if you're a Spurs fan that the young guys are playing well. Vassell, I think he's averaging over 20 a game. And so, yeah, for them to win 3 out of 4 coming out of the gate, surprising. Definitely don't expect them to stay there. And definitely, I think the Spurs, when you look at their roster, a lot of young guys, a lot of guys that they're trying to develop. And clearly, both of these teams want to be in the Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes. So I don't anticipate that they're going to continue to win, whether that's through roster manipulations by the front office or injury, whatever, load management, whatever you want to call it. These two teams are going to eventually sink down, back down to the bottom where, I don't want to say where they belong, but where they expect to be.
Yep. All right, the next three teams I'm going to group together, Mike. Memphis, okay. Phoenix, Golden State. I think they're all three teams are what we've expected. You know, like, not taking into account for tonight's game because Phoenix is destroying Golden State right now. But I just think
I think these three teams are all what we kind of expect. Maybe Phoenix is, and we kind of already said our piece on this. Maybe Phoenix is surpassing expectations basically because we thought they'd be down at this point. But I think they're basically where we thought they'd be right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think all three of those teams, when you look at them, as I said, I think with the Eastern Conference and also the West, there's going to be a ton of teams that I think that are going to win between 44 and 50 games because there's so many good teams at the top of these conferences that all are sort of the same in terms of where they fit. On any given night, I think any of these teams can beat anyone else. And I just don't see one team running away and winning 64 games like the Suns did last year. To me, that seems completely unrealistic. It seems more like seed one and seed five are going to be separated by like three games. I could see that in both conferences based on what we have. And Memphis has been what we've expected. Ja has been unbelievable coming out of the gate. Phoenix, I think coming back, and it sounds silly, but I think coming back and winning that Mavs game on the first night when they were down 20-something in the first half after having lost game seven to that same team in their own building last spring, if they had lost that game, it seems silly, but it just felt like as I was watching that and looking at their faces in that first half that if they had lost that game to Dallas, I'm not saying their whole season spirals out of control because that seems like a little bit of an over-exaggeration, but I think coming back and winning that game psychologically meant a lot to that team. And look, Phoenix isn't going to win 64 games, but I think they're right there in the mix of teams that could finish first in the Western Conference, or they could finish sixth, and they probably will be within two or three games of everybody else.
All right, okay, and then I was going to lump the next three teams together, Mike. Denver, okay. Minnesota, the Clippers.
Yep.
Did I already talk about Denver? No, I didn't. Okay, Denver, Minnesota, the Clippers. They're all three are 2-2. They're kind of what I expect. I would say this, though. I expected the Clippers to be, inconsistent because they're going to not play Kawhi in back-to-backs and players are not going to play, and they're just playing to get to the postseason pretty much. I'll say Minnesota's been a little underwhelming so far. They looked good in the one game that I, watched, but when I look and see,
Too much Popeyes, man. Too much Popeyes chicken for Anthony Edwards. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
Towns during, I don't know if it was a press conference or something, he said he's not happy with Anthony Edwards eating all the Popeyes chicken. He's got to really work on his body. So anyway, look, I think Minnesota, yeah, to this point, they haven't come out of the gate on fire the way you might have hoped for if you were a Timberwolves fan. But that team's going to be fine. The Clippers, they are what they are. Both of us took the under on 52.5 because I just don't think those two guys are going to play. Like Paul George sat out tonight with an illness. Kawhi had right knee soreness, so he was sitting out. So those guys are going to miss a ton of games. And the Clippers are going to finish, I think, probably somewhere in the 40. They're going to win 45+. But I don't think they're going to win more than 50. Those guys just aren't going to play enough. They want to keep them healthy for the playoffs. And then Dallas, look, the rest of the roster around Luka isn't great. Luka himself is going to continue to be outstanding.
But you saw he got so tired at the end of the game tonight.
It's too much. I think here's what I would say is if he ever wants to maximize what he can be, he's going to have to be willing to give up the ball and play off the ball a little bit. Because otherwise, you're looking at – basically, you're just recreating what James Harden was with the Rockets. Now, Luka's already done more clutch things in the playoffs than James Harden ever has. So there's that. But I just don't think you can win like that over 82 games and then over four series in the playoffs. I just don't think you can. I think
James Harden, Mike.
What about
him? He sat on the bench and his team came back.
Right, I know.
Come on, that he did so much for his team that night. He sat on the bench. He sat there and let.
He was a towel rack. He was a towel rack that night. So anyway, look, Dallas is going to be fine. Luka's going to be fine. I just don't know if they're the formula that they have, at least with the roster that they have. I don't know that it's a championship formula because the rest of these teams have multiple guys and multiple ways of attacking you. And unless Dallas surrounds him with the absolute perfect roster. I just think you made a great point that it's tiring, man, doing everything. And it also takes away from whatever he can give you on defense, which isn't a whole lot to begin with. Dallas is going to be okay, but I don't know. I think you the guy, the one-man show that it appears that that's the way that they want to play or going to play, I just don't know that that works long-term. And I don't know that it works that well trying to win an NBA title with that eventually. Eventually, they're going to have to do something different there.
Well, I appreciate you saying I make a good point because I don't make lots of great points. So
you've had some good ones tonight. You've had some good ones tonight.
Well, great. I'm glad I'm on a roll. Okay. The next, I'm just going to lump the next three teams together as well, Mike. Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, it's fine.
And we'll save the other team for last.
Sure.
Houston, Oklahoma City, Sacramento. They're what I expected them to be. I actually expected Sacramento to be better. But I'm not surprised that they're in the bottom of the Western Conference. Because really, Houston and OKC aren't trying to win. It's clear. People on the Houston bench are arguing. It's like James Harden's back on the team again. Oklahoma City, they don't have any reason to win. I know they won tonight. Who'd they beat tonight? They beat
Clippers.
Oh yeah, but the Clippers. The Clippers were resting a lot of people, and but they don't have any reason to win because they're not going to compete this year. In Sacramento, I kind of gave them a chance to compete, and they haven't really looked that good, Mike.
They played the Clippers, who were at full strength. They played the Warriors, and then they played Portland on the first night, which people thought, not really. That's a game that Portland or that Sacramento should win at home. And I think people were coming into the season thinking, Portland's down. But that being said, they've lost a few. They lost to the Clippers by 2. They lost to Golden State by 5. They lost to Portland by 7. So they haven't been getting blown out. I think Sacramento still is going to be fine. We both took the over at 33.5. I think that over is so low that, to me, I think they're going to get there. Now, if Portland is a lot better, that complicates things maybe a little bit. I do think that Utah and San Antonio are not as good as Sacramento. So I think Sacramento will right the ship. And then those other two teams, Houston has a lot of young talent. You're right. They did have a little argument, a little dust up there between, I think it was between Jabari and Jalen Green.
Jalen Green, yeah.
So I had a little, I told you I had a, I don't know if it's a hot take on the Houston Rockets, but Jalen Green, number 2 pick last year. Not many people thought that he was in the mix, right? So of the top 4 guys, Jalen Green was not at all in the mix for rookie of the year, best rookie. You had Cade go 1, Jalen Green go 2, Mobley go 3, Scotty Barnes go 4. If you were a Houston fan last year, you weren't feeling too good. But man, have you seen some of the Jalen Green highlights? Now, maybe he just ends up being a guy who is an athletic wonder and a gunner, a scorer on bad teams. Maybe he's a big stats, bad team guy. But some of the things that he's doing and his athleticism and his ability to shoot the ball right now, if I was a Rockets fan, I'd be feeling a lot better sitting here today than I was 6 months ago when it comes to Jalen Green.
I agree with you. Everything you just said, Mike, he's not been what I would say worthy of the pick that they made. Still not as bad as the Anthony Bennett pick, but
look, my hot take is, could Jalen Green be the best of all 4 of those guys? Here's his stat line.
Okay.
24 a game. Now, I know he's doing it on a bad team. But most of these guys, except for Mobley, I guess Barnes.
I'm not saying, Mike, listen, wait, that would be like saying Sexton. No, come on. That'd be like saying Sexton.
Jalen Green, 24 a game, shooting 46% from the field, shooting 48% from 3, shooting 93% from the line. He's averaging 2.5 assists, but he's a shooting guard. 2.5 turnovers, so he's got a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, which isn't great. 4 rebounds, so he's not a huge rebounder. But as a scorer, this guy is going to score. Now, do I think he's going to be better than those other three guys? Probably not.
But, no, Mike. The answer is no.
But athletically, and the way he can score, he's going to be a really good scorer in this league. He's going to be a really good scorer. And whether that translates to winning, we'll see.
It's what we've dealt with Sexton. Sexton was great on a really bad team. And I know he played well last year. When
Jalen Green's going to be way better than Colin Sexton.
I know, but...
let me just say this. If you're a Rockets fan, you are no longer feeling like, oh my God, we completely and utterly made a huge mistake.
I still think Mobley's going to be a far superior player than he is. Do you? Okay, so here's what I want to say.
I do too. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Like, so you would say, of those guys, like, who is the best chance to be an MVP candidate right now? Mobley, right?
Or
Scottie Barnes. Those have to be the one too.
I
can't put Cade because I don't think his team's going to ever be good enough. At least in the next five.
That's a great question. That's really a great question. Which of those four guys could be an MVP first? I
think the best template right now is either Barnes or Mobley. Because those two teams are going to be good.
Barnes is never going to score enough.
Okay, then it's got to be Mobley then.
He doesn't shoot it well enough. I think it's got to be Cade or Mobley. And I guess 2 weeks ago I would have said Mobley. These first three games have me a little bit shook because I just don't see anything, like I said, that's markedly better about what he does. Though.
I know we've already talked Cavs, and we still have to talk Lakers really quickly. But, like, does any of that have to do with the fact that Garland has been out and Garland was, like, I would love to...
Right, but if you're going to be the MVP, you're not the MVP because Darius Garland is throwing you lobs and getting you easy catch and shoot.
You're out of whack because of the lineup situation. Right,
I get it. Look, I understand, and I'm not... saying that I'm completely off the Mobley bandwagon. I'm not saying that at all. I'm still completely on. But I expected to see a flash of something different in these first three games. And I haven't really seen anything. And that makes me just a little bit nervous that I haven't seen anything.
Well, he also had an ankle injury too, Mike.
True. True. Good point. Look, man, I still would not. I would not trade Mobley for any of those other three guys. So I guess that's what it comes down to for me. I would not trade Mobley, especially because of what he brings on the defensive end of the floor. Forget about his offense. He's just already such an elite defender that the value in that is huge.
All right, Mike, it's time to talk about the last team before we end the podcast. The Los Angeles the Lakers. Or,
oh my gosh,
we're going to start calling them the Los Angeles Brickers because of those West Bricks that keep going up. Listen, I know you and I talked. LeBron's stat lines have been great so far. He's actually looked really good. Anthony Davis hasn't looked bad. He hasn't looked great, but he hasn't looked bad. The Lakers should have won that game the other night. There's 18 seconds of the shot clock, 25 seconds left in the game. And Westbrook jacks up a elbow extended shot. Did you see what he said post game, Mike? Westbrook, why were you taking that shot? I was trying to give our team a 2-for-1 opportunity in case we needed it. There's 25 seconds left, 18 seconds on the shot clock. You're up. I think they were up 1 or 2 points.
They're up
1 point. Don't take the shot, Russell. Let it come down because at the worst case scenario, your team doesn't score and the other team only has 6 seconds left, probably. Like, I can't believe Charles Barkley said last week, "Oh, we got to get Russell Westbrook out of the Lakers. They've sucked the joy out of the." Of LeBron and AD have sucked the joy out of him playing basketball. Are you kidding me, Charles Barkley? Of all the takes that I've had, that you've had, this has to be one of the worst. He sucked everything out of the Lakers. Just watch. Did you see the video of when Russell shot that shot? LeBron.
Yeah.
Turning around in disgust.
It was very Dion
Waiters reminiscent.
Yeah, it reminded me of the J.R. Smith timeout call.
It was so bad. Yeah, so awful.
I think Russell Westbrook needs to not be on this team, and he's been terrible. He's a terrible fit for this team. At this point in his career, he just isn't a functional player that fits with what the Lakers are trying to do. I guess he could be on a bottom feeder team that is trying to tank. Let's trade him to the Jazz, where he can just go do what he wants with other veteran guys. And I mean, it's just he's shooting 29% from the field at this point after three games. 29%. Although he's shooting better.
Do you think, Mike, you could shoot 29% from the field?
No, probably not.
Oh,
Patrick Beverly's shooting 20%. I might be able to shoot 20%. I might be able to throw in 1 for 5 if you just let me stand somewhere. But, okay, this team, one, Russell Westbrook cannot be on this roster through the remainder of the season. If he is, then the Lakers are going to continue to flounder, and they're going to finish at the very bottom of the Western Conference.
How many more years does Westbrook have on his contract? This isn't the last year, right?
I think he has one more. I think he has a player option. Well, no, because I think he exercised the player option, so this might be his last year.
Okay, you keep talking. I'm just gonna check that real quick.
Regardless of what his contract status is, he cannot be on this team. If the Lakers have any desire to be a functional NBA team, they have to either just sit Russell Westbrook down, they need to buy him out, or they need to trade him for whatever they think they can trade him for. No, because
you're correct. He's making $47 million this year. Yeah. Like,
so it's not working. It's not going to work. The rest of this roster is just terrible. I mean, you maybe have a bunch of guys who on a good team are the ninth man on a good team. That's who every one of the other players. Austin Reeves, at this point, Beverly, Kendrick Nunn, Troy Brown Jr., Toscano Anderson, Damian Jones. Like, these guys are ninth men on good teams. They just are. And that's what the Lakers are trying to go to war with. And LeBron has become a guy who is shooting a ton of threes. Right now, he's shooting 26% from three-point land. He's still putting up his stats, averaging 27, 11, and 7.5 assists. I mean, it's ridiculous what this guy's doing from a stat perspective, but he's just not at the same level that he was 5, 6, 7 years ago, where he could carry a decimated roster to wins night in and night out. He's not at that level. That's the one thing that he's lost. He can still, over the course of 40 minutes, he can still put up big numbers, but he's just not going to carry a team the same way that he used to. And look, if you are a Pelicans fan, it is hard to believe that you could be any happier or rooting harder against a team than what the Pelicans are rooting against the Lakers, because the Pelicans have that Lakers pick. And if things continue the way they are, which I just don't see anything out there that is going to make a difference, because this team, let's say you can trade Westbrook and those two number one picks, the 27 and the 29 number one picks. First of all, what are you getting? Let's say you get Buddy Hield and Miles Turner and you plug those two guys into this lineup. Now, your starting lineup is
pretty good.
Better, pretty decent, but your bench and everything that you have around those guys is still terrible. Now, let's say they upgrade, and let's say they're able to get – there was a lot of talk, right, that they might be able to get Dame if Portland went south. Well, doesn't look like that's going to happen. Highly unlikely that Portland's going to trade Damian Lillard averaging 32 points a game to the Lakers. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Bradley Beal. Let's just say the Wizards go south and the Lakers trade those two picks and Westbrook for Bradley Beal. You plug Bradley Beal into the Westbrook spot. Is this team a legitimate championship contender at that point? their roster is still exactly the same. They still have all the same issues. Now, your addition by subtraction by getting rid of Russ, and theoretically Bradley Beal should be additive to what the Lakers are doing, but that big three surrounded by the rest of this roster is not going to get it done. You're not a legitimate championship team. So I don't care. I don't know who's out there. I mean, you're not getting back something for those two picks that's going to make you into a championship, unless you're trading those two picks for Giannis. It's just there's no player that's going to be available that's going to be good enough to be able to elevate this Lakers roster. And I think what you're going to hear as the season goes on, obviously until Russ goes, that's where all the talk is going to focus. But as this season goes on, depending on what happens with Russ and those two picks and the trades, the LeBron speculation is going to start to pick up. And whether or not he demands a trade, whether the Lakers decide they want to move on.
He can't get traded, though, right? He can't get traded.
Not until the end of the season. But I'm saying, if this season for the Lakers goes up in flames and it becomes clear that, whatever, they don't trade Westbrook or they do trade him, and once they do, things just continue to sort of meander along. As we get to February, March, April, there's going to be a lot of discussion about, hey, where's LeBron going to be next year? And who knows, maybe he's going to be in LA just because he wants to live there and he's just going to stay a Laker and he's fine with that. But that's not going to stop people from talking about potentially where he could go and where he could end up, because it just seems crazy that he'd be content to be playing at the level that he's playing and play for a team that's going to be sub 500, and more than likely, the way they're constituted now, this team's not even going to make the play-in.
I mean, I agree with everything you just said, Mike. And it's sad to me.
Yep.
It's sad. And to be honest with you, I don't know if, like I know we can lay this at a lot of people's feet. I don't know that we can lay this at LeBron's feet, right? Like, can you lay this at his feet? Like,
in terms of what?
Is in terms of the reason that this is all going down as badly as it is, like, is he to blame? I think
he wanted Westbrook, right?
Well, he had to sign off on it. I don't know that he was like jumping up and down saying do this. I think like he thought maybe this would work. I don't know that he like
if you still had Kuzma, KCP, and Caruso. This is a way better team. It's a way better team.
So, but
it's a way better team.
What makes me say that, although, like he definitely signed off on it. But do you think he actively made this trade? Like, did he actively get involved in this?
I think so. Yeah.
I
think so. I think so.
I'd love to give him truth serum, because I don't think he would ever say that he. Either
way, he's never going to say if he did or he didn't. But I would say at this point in his career, I don't see that happening without him pushing for it. And maybe they come to him and say, hey, what do you think? But to me, look, it's very, very rare that star players have been good GMs. It doesn't happen while they're playing anyway. Jordan was not a good player GM in terms of guys that he wanted to make acquisitions. LeBron, during his time in Cleveland, was never a good GM in terms of the guys that he wanted to bring in or that he felt were going to be a good fit with his and his roster. So this team's a mess. And all I can say is if you are a Pelicans fan, you are rooting hard for this to continue to go south. And I don't see how they right the ship, because to me, Anthony Davis is a passive guy who he's super talented. He can do anything you want on the floor, but the fact that he has not seized the mantle from 37-year-old LeBron James, as great as LeBron is, Davis should be their best player right now, and he's not. And he doesn't have that swagger. He doesn't have that grab-the-game-by-the-throat mentality. He just doesn't. And so I think this team, no matter what they do, no matter what they're able to turn those two first-round picks and Russell Westbrook into – It just doesn't matter. This team's not going to contend for a title. And come April, May, next spring, there's going to be a lot of speculation about where's LeBron going to play next. And like I said, he may end up playing in LA because that's where he wants to live. And Maybe he's content to just sort of while away and break Kareem's all-time scoring record. But there's going to be a lot of other people speculating about where could LeBron go, where could he be traded to, where could he demand a trade to get to. And I think that's going to occupy a lot of sports talk and podcast talk come the spring.
The Cleveland Cavaliers?
I mean, obviously, the Cavs wing situation would dictate that LeBron's almost the perfect fit for this team. I guess we're going to have to see how this year plays out. If this year plays out the way I think it does and this team continues to ascend, obviously I think if LeBron wanted to come here, you'd have to do it. But, man, I would be nervous. I'm not sure I would be excited about it. I would be like hanging off the side of the cliff. Wow, this is what a view. This is so thrilling. But man, I could plummet to my death 2 seconds later. That's the kind of feeling I would have if LeBron were to come here. It'd be like looking at a beautiful view, standing on the edge of a cliff where, man, things could really turn out great and I could have some awesome memories. Or man, we could totally mess up what could potentially be a good thing.
I don't disagree with anything that you just said, Mike. I just think that what's going to happen is this. The Cavs are going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, as I predicted in my episode.
Okay.
We're going to be that one guy short. And the Lakers are going to be terrible. And he's going to want out. And it's going to be the perfect storm. Because we're going to theoretically have the space because Love's contract's gone.
Are you going to trade him? What are you going to trade for him, though? That's the problem.
I don't know what the semantics are going to be and what we'd have to give up. But you're not going to give up Mobley. You're not going to give up Garland. You're not going to give up... who am I missing? Mitchell. Whatever else on our roster we do...
We don't have any picks to give up, though, either. You know what I mean? Like, I think him coming here as a free agent was more plausible. The fact that now you have to trade for him makes it a little bit hard to believe.
Well, I don't want us to try to figure that out right now.
Let's not try to figure that out.
Anyways, right. It's 12:30.
Yep.
I can't do the math right now.
I understand. All right. Let's leave it there. To everyone out there, we appreciate you listening. It has been a fun start to the NBA season. As you said off the top, it is great to have basketball back. It's so fun to be able to check in on games, to be able to check box scores, to be able to read about actual games and not speculation. So, a lot of fun. Thank you for checking us out tonight. We appreciate you listening to this NBA episode. Make sure you keep on listening to the Hoopheads podcast. We appreciate you being a part of our audience, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.